What do you want to teach your kids? What are you concerned about that the public school system is teaching them? And how can we help?
I have a feeling there are going to be a lot of parents who buy this because someone recommended it, or they go watch the show or what have you, and it reorients their thinking.
You know, he took me his Tooth Fairy money the other day and asked, "Dad, can you put this in Bitcoin?" Because he's afraid that the inflation monster is going to be eating his money.
You want to push your kids, you know, to like stretch themselves and try new things. And you also don't want to fall into the Prussian education trap where you're determining this is what you learn and this is how you learn.
I mean, I think Bitcoiners are family people, you know? Once you get into Bitcoin, you get into this long-term thinking and you have a family, and then you realize you don't want the state educating your kids.
Hey everyone, Michael here with the Bitcoin Way podcast. Thank you for tuning in. Today on the show, I have Johnny Vance, the man behind Tuttle Twins. If you are a homeschool parent or a parent of any kind, this episode is definitely for you. Even if not, Johnny is an awesome guy, very fun guy to listen to. He is building something incredibly powerful that I think we are going to look back on in the future as one of the most important things done in this generation. So I hope you enjoy this episode as much as I enjoyed the opportunity to talk to Johnny. Hey everyone, like I said in the intro, I've got Johnny here. Johnny, welcome to the Bitcoin Way podcast.
Pleasure to be here. Thanks for having me on, Michael.
I'm looking forward to this because we were talking offline. Like you, I was geeking out, telling you all sorts of ideas I had for you, but you guys have built an unbelievable product already. We got to meet very briefly in Las Vegas, and I think it was Adam O'Brien was talking to you, and he pulled me aside and introduced us. And I'm glad he did, because what I did after that, I just want to let you know, I had been going back to the bazaar where they were selling, you know, all the gear and merch and everything. And I'd passed your booth several times, was very familiar with it. And the line was always very long. And so I'd catch up with a couple of friends I knew who were selling some things. And after I met you, I said, I'm going to go to your booth right now and buy some stuff. And that's exactly what I did. So I waited in line. I got to pay in Bitcoin, 100% worth it. I have been reading Tuttle Twins to my kids, showing them the shows. Everything. So thank you. You are truly doing God's work here. How was your Vegas experience, my friend?
Oh man. I mean, overwhelming. It feels like a family reunion of all these people that, you know, this extended family we didn't know we had, people that are like-minded that have gone down, you know, both the Bitcoin and the freedom rabbit hole. And just, I mean, I think Bitcoiners are family people, you know. Once you get into Bitcoin, you get into this long-term thinking and you have a family, and then you realize you don't want the state educating your kids. We're just happy to be a part of that, you know, be helpful. Like, here's a resource for parents looking for something. So we were blown away. Just the amount of support from the Bitcoin community has just been baffling to us.
Are you finding at those conferences now that people are coming up to you, oh, I've heard about the Tuttle Twins, or is it a lot of people who are still unfamiliar and trying to figure out what you're doing?
I'd say the majority of people know us. I'd say probably half and half know us well. So most people have heard of Tuttle Twins. It's just, you know, in the Bitcoin community, it's impressive how many like know us pretty well. So
yeah. I'm curious. So Bitcoiners seem like a very obvious market for you. Are there, I think my sister-in-law, we homeschool, my sister-in-law and brother homeschool. I think she said she's seen you guys at like homeschool conventions. I assume that would make sense. Are there other like markets that you tend to find are like a really sweet spot for you to get to?
I mean, we're just trying to make shows for our own families. That's honestly the only, you know, expertise we have is like, what do we want for our own kids? And so it's really been sort of a discovery for us. Like, yeah, homeschoolers love our show. Bitcoiners love our show. I think people in general that are just waking up to, you know, the system isn't what I was told it was. And I want my kids to not go through a government propaganda machine. You know, I think COVID did a number on so many families, and they just opened their eyes to something that they can't kind of be blinded to anymore. And so, yeah, I'd say just families, conservative libertarian families, or just families who are looking to have critical thinking in their education for their kids.
Yeah. So remind me, when was Tuttle Twins started? When did you get rolling on this?
Yeah. So our good friend, Connor Boyack, he started with one book, and he, you know, was struggling to explain what he did with his think tank to his kid. It was this libertarian freedom thinking think tank. And they were trying to, you know, pass laws in Utah. One of the laws was a lemonade law where it would actually allow kids to sell lemonade without a food license. And we were like the first state to get that passed, which is really bizarre that cops would be, you know, shutting down kids' lemonade stands. That's another story. But so he made this book based on the law by Frederick Bastiat, and it just started taking off. We loved what he was doing. We started buying the books. And at the time, myself and my co-founder, Daniel Harmon, we'd been doing ads. So if you've ever seen like those old internet ads for like Squatty Potty or Purple Mattress or Lumi Deodorant, it's like the really entertaining, goofy ads, that's what we were doing. And we'd kind of gotten to this point where like we can sell, you know, hundreds of millions of dollars of random products, but we want to tell stories and we want to do something meaningful. And so we approached Connor and we said, I think at the time they'd sold a million books of these Tuttle Twins book series. Yeah.
Wow.
And then we said, what if we could turn this into a TV show? We'd go to the crowd. We'd see if the crowd wants to fund it. And he said, okay, if the crowd wants to fund it, great. And we kind of made a crowdfunding campaign and ended up breaking the world record for most crowdfunded kids show. Like, it was overwhelming the amount of support that parents had for this. And we raised almost $5 million for season one. And we were like, oh my gosh, let's make this. And, you know, and ever since then, we've just been beholden to our audience. Like, we're not a studio show. We're a crowdfunded show and we're beholden to parents. And so that's been our model, is just listen to the parents. What do you want to teach your kids? What are you concerned about that the public school system is teaching them? And how can we help? And it's in October, we'll be kicking off season four of the show. So it's been pretty incredible.
I love it. When you say kicking off, you mean beginning production or releasing?
Releasing. Yeah. So we're airing.
Okay.
We're airing season four starting in October.
Good. Okay. I love it. I've been with the show. So my older daughter, she's almost seven. She's able on occasion to stay up a little bit later. And so what I've been doing is making like a special daddy daughter thing and like, hey, it's a special night. You get to hang out with me and watch a Tuttle Twins show that she usually doesn't get to watch. So that's been a lot of fun. So what year was the crowdfunding again?
Yeah. So we crowdfunded in 2020. So right.
2020.
Beginning of the pandemic.
Smack dab in the middle of it.
Right when everything started to crumble. Yeah.
Do you think that part of what happened there, I could feasibly see you raising $5 million just from people like me who, you know, are kind of liberty oriented anyway. Do you think what happened though is a lot of people who were helping to fund you were the people who were waking up and saying, whoa, what is happening here in the midst of COVID?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. I think that all contributed, you know, and I think the money printer was running hot. I think people were just baffled at what was happening and awakened to, man, this is what happens when we're social distance learning. Like, I really need another option, you know, people just fed up. And so, I think it was the perfect storm at the right time. And we're very grateful.
So are you homeschooling your kids then?
Yeah. So my oldest is six. It's his second year homeschooling. And we're just figuring it out, you know, kid by kid and what each child needs. But it's been really gratifying so far.
I'll tell you what, man, it really is a game changer. And I know not everyone is blessed with the opportunity to do that. And there are financial implications, but I could say the same for me. We've been my wife is, I take very little credit. I have very strong opinions on certain aspects of their education and sort of extracurricular things that I want to make sure that they're learning. Like my wife, probably if I never said anything about Tuttle Twins, she wouldn't be so inclined to that. But I think she, like, now that she sees it and I've presented it to her as a non-optional aspect of their curriculum, she's on board and has also been enjoying it. But I told you, so what I usually, my work day usually consists of work in the morning, quick lunch break. I put my son down for his nap and then I get back to work. And I was reading, I'm forgetting the name of one of Connor's books today. and it was education vacation. So they were talking about like the problem with, you know, the education system and like this one size fits all. And I think what I like about a lot of what you've been doing has been, and we don't have the graphic novels yet. I need to get those because I think my kids would both really enjoy that. But you've got like these like multiple dimensions, and so while the concepts in general are common amongst them, you know, liberty, freedom, personal responsibility, like you've got different ways for people to engage with the content. I would love to hear like so Connor was writing, you had the TV show, the show that came out after the crowdfunding. When did the graphic novels come in? Tell me a little bit more about like this American history one you've got, because it seems like you got a lot of irons in the fire. How do you like sort of determine your path on all of this?
Yeah. So, I mean, first of all, can you hear me? Okay. Something happened to the sound. Okay.
No, you're good.
So Connor, you know, he started it all, and to date they've sold 5 million books. So like crazy growth. But they're a sister company to the show. So we're part of, you know, we're sister companies to them. So we're doing our own thing, but together it's a good resource. I'd say like the show is probably maybe 20% education, 80% fun. And it's probably flipped for the books for Connor. So it's a bit like we want to compete with Phineas and Ferb. We want to compete with Bluey. And then Connor, the books are a great resource to dive deeper. And so I guess, yeah, what was your question? Like, how do we juggle it all?
Yeah. So like what's been your thought process in how you've rolled these things out? Like, was there any method to the madness, or was it just, you know, you sort of finish a season of shows and you'd say, hey, what else can we produce? Or, cause it feels like you've just got a lot of things cooking.
Yeah. I mean, honestly, it's been throw stuff at the wall and see what sticks. We've tried so many merchandise products, but the graphic novels were just something that parents we found loved. Like a screen-free way to rewatch the episodes is what they told us. They're like, this is great. Like my kids have read this, I don't know how many times, way more than they've seen the shows. And so just a way to kind of memorize or cement these concepts in their brains. But it's really just been fail forward, because we've had many things that haven't worked and we just leaned into what has.
So understand that Connor worked at sort of a libertarian sort of think tank. What was your, like, how did you, it's very easy to find a conservative and it's very easy to find a liberal, like very traditional, like that distinction. It's much harder to find someone who goes down some of the rabbit holes that you guys have gone down with your content. To me, it seems intuitive when you like, I think I could give the Connor's books, for example, to my family and they'd be like, oh yeah, that makes so much sense. I'm now leaning libertarian. Like the government shouldn't be involved in any of these decisions. But what was it for you? Like how did you get on this path to begin with?
Yeah. So right out of school, man, I was so out of politics. I just had no clue. I think I took one economics class in college, but I joined Harmon Brothers, our ad agency, right out of school. And they just gotten done doing, you know, they'd helped Ron Paul and his campaign a few years ago. So big Ron Paul guys and very libertarian in their thinking. And I just sort of like, it just sort of opened up my eyes. And to me, it's always been sort of a principles-based thing first, where it's like, here are the principles of liberty. And sometimes the right's good at it and sometimes the left's good at it. But, you know, it's not a party thing. Nobody is doing it completely well. And to me, honestly, like we helped Rand Paul and we even helped like Gary Johnson at the time, the libertarian candidate in the Trump Hillary election. But it was kind of it was just kind of crazy to see, like, when you dive down beneath the buzzwords, I think most people agree on the principles. And we've just seen that with the show where we have. You know, we let the parents dictate what we make, but we have writers that are center left. We have writers that are center right. And they all pretty much can get behind these concepts once you dive below the buzzwords and you realize, oh, wow, this is actually how the world works. So it's really refreshing that, you know, we're not a political party show. We're a principle show. And it's really pressing when you see the walls come down and people being like, oh yeah, that does seem bad. And let's end the Fed together, you know? So.
Yeah, I think that's a good way of framing it, because my experience is, at least I think there are plenty of unreasonable people in the world, but I think by and large, you just, you know, walk through the grocery store and talk to someone, they're probably a lot closer, more closely aligned with you, even if they voted a different way in the last election or what have you. And I'm at this point, I'm very apolitical because I just don't trust anyone. And I believe in, you know, freedom and not politicians to fix anything for me or for us. You do, though, take some hilarious shots in your show at the communists. And that is, to me, it's always open season on communists. So you're more than, I mean that obviously in a non-physical way. I think I love it. And it's one of those things that I've already begun to explain. Like my son told my sister-in-law a few weeks ago, out of the blue, he said, FDR was the worst president. And she was like, hey, like, what are you teaching him over there? I was like, oh, sorry, Tuttle twins, you know. But you guys have done a really good job of like weaving in like the adult entertainment into your shows. Like the grandma makes a lot of, you know, good comments that I think most thoughtful adults will appreciate. So how about Bitcoin? When did you find Bitcoin, and how did you just like, was that when you had to debate weaving that into the shows? Because I feel like there are a lot more people who can get behind sort of the liberty-based, you know, the principles approach that you're talking about. Bitcoin, I have very few people in my life outside of work who understand Bitcoin, don't think it's a scam, don't think it's a Ponzi, or at least think positively of it in general. Was that like a one you batted around a lot before you proceeded with it?
Yeah, I would say it was a big decision for us in the show to make the first kids show about Bitcoin, the first kids episode. And it was kind of, definitely had a lot of reasons not to do it. Personally, so when I joined Harmer Brothers, these guys were just OG Bitcoiners from the start. When I asked what should I invest in, none of them told me stocks. They just told me, oh yeah, just put a little bit in Bitcoin, put a little bit in ETH. And, I went through my own crap coin sort of journey, but, I think I was into crypto for a while. It wasn't until we did the Bitcoin episode, when we decided on a Bitcoin episode, that I fully became a hardcore Bitcoiner. And that was in researching for the episode. Like, I think I learned more than any kid, just learning the principles that we're going to teach with each of these episodes. And it's just such a deep dive to be able to teach these principles. So, for me, that's when it really clicked for me. And I went down the Bitcoin rabbit hole. We'd done an episode on the inflation monster in season one, and I knew we probably couldn't do Bitcoin season one. Like, we needed the audience to gain our trust, but it just got so discouraging because inflation was running rampant and we wanted to teach our audience and the kids, especially, what can you do? Like, there's not a lot of hope when the government's steering the wheel. And as we went down this Bitcoin rabbit hole, that became instantly clear. Man, this is libertarianism with teeth. This is freedom with action. Like, this is what we can give them to do. And I mean, honestly, we've been recommending Bitcoin since it was, 2015, to our audience members. And I mean, not all of them have gotten on board, but when we released that episode, it just blew us away. Like, it has over 50 million views to date now. It's been our number one viewed episode besides the inflation monster. We immediately saw families be like, well, I agree with most of your concepts. I'm not sure about this Bitcoin thing, but I'll give it a shot. And we had kids asking their parents for allowance in Bitcoin, and the moms being like, I don't know. I don't even know how. And so, I mean, we do get squeaky wheel comments sometimes. Guys, like, would you shut up about Bitcoin? But, it's too big of a, safety net and a safety, like a lifeboat that we feel like kind of this duty to just weave it through the show, season after season, just to make sure that we can help as many families as we can.
Yeah, my daughter was she and I have a fun relationship. She'll just like troll me and mess around with me, and so she's always been like, I don't like Bitcoin, just like, you know, just because she knows like that's my thing. And I had her watch the episode, and the whole time she was like, why can't I see his face? Like, are they going to show Satoshi's face? I was like, baby, that's kind of the point. It's like, we don't know what he looked like, so they're not showing his face. Like, this is, he's a mysterious person or whatever. And she was so frustrated. But I think it was the first time she ever, like, for me, it was helpful because I can sit there and explain, you know, I mean, she's, you know, 6.5 years old, that, you know, it's a better form of money. So, you know how you use a quarter to buy a gumball? Like, well, imagine if you had something that like they couldn't just make more of, and now, you know, that gumball is going to cost more money, some, you know, or whatever. But I think you've broken it down really well. It's such a hard concept to explain, though. And I'm finding myself in an uphill battle at the moment. I finally, at $120,000 at the time of this recording, give or take, got four phone calls on the schedule with friends and past sort of acquaintances. And I'm going to be meeting with my church next week, leadership at my church, to discuss a strategic reserve for the church. And I'm sitting here sifting through how to approach the subject. And so I can only imagine the torment you must have gone through trying to figure out how to explain this in a way that the average homeschool mom or dad could grasp. Was that episode, did that one take you longer than the others? Or?
Oh, yeah. By far the hardest episode we've ever had to write was the first Bitcoin episode we did. Yeah, just...
How long does it take you to make an episode? Like, how long from, like, this is the concept we want to explain to it's ready to be, you know, presented in public?
Yeah, about 9 to 10 months is, like, from start to finish. So writing is only, like, 6 weeks. Okay. But, I mean, that one, yeah, I mean, I'm not even sure we did distill it down to the level that we needed. It was so, you know, Bitcoin is so dense. But we tried to do the best we could. And honestly, we just made it for ourselves and for our kids, figuring that kids can watch this a few times and maybe get more and more each time they watch it, you know. But yeah, for sure, the most painful episode to write.
I can only imagine. So what was it for you then? You said as you were researching to prepare for that episode, you sort of turned into a Bitcoin maxi. You quit with the, you know, anything else.
Yeah.
What was it that stood out to you is like, okay, this is the signal amongst a lot of noise?
Yeah. I mean, to me, it was, yeah, just reading the Bitcoin standard, realizing the absolute scarcity, you know, realizing the history of money and just going through that thought process and then just realizing that every other cryptocurrency is not scarce, that it's not hard to create. Like we always sum up our lessons of each episode in a little rhyme. And the one for that episode is when money's easy to create, society begins to break or something like that. See, I'm botching it.
Yeah,
but it's true. Like that was the thing is like that is what protects Bitcoin is this absolute scarcity and something that society had with beads and with gold at a certain time, but inevitably it gets easier to create and the system breaks. And now it's just something that hasn't been broken and it's, you know, basically hope.
Yeah. Yeah. So I'm going to play a little bit of Keeping Up with the Joneses here. I'm curious, how well does your 6-year-old grasp Bitcoin? Is it something that like the wheels are turning? She understands it?
Yeah, so it's a boy, my son.
Your oldest is a boy.
He's gotten to the point where it's funny how, yeah, with kids, when you don't have to unlearn fiat, it's just so simple. They just understand. But he's gotten to the point where, you know, he took me his Tooth Fairy money the other day and asked, Dad, can you put this in Bitcoin? Because he's afraid that the inflation monster is going to be, you know, eating his money. And so, I mean, to a level, he understands that, like, yeah, you know, money's a melting ice cube. I got to put it in Bitcoin fast. And yeah, this summer we were selling door to door. He was trying to save up for a toy and the lady wanted to pay him in cash. And he's like, oh, actually, I prefer not. I'm like, he's worried about inflation. I'm sorry.
That is amazing. So I told my my daughter yesterday, I guess my wife had them. So we've got like chores, that things that they've got to do as part of a family. But then we'll give them opportunities for like additional sort of labor, and we'll compensate them for things that exist outside of the realm of normal family duties. And I guess they had done some work, and my daughter mentioned it to me last night, and I asked her, I was like, okay, do you want me to pay you in Bitcoin? She's like, how do you pay? Like, how can you pay me in Bitcoin? I was like, well, I was like trying to think, like, I don't actually have a solution for a 6-year-old kid. So I was like, well, we could like download a wallet onto the phone. She goes, Dad, I don't have a phone. I was like, okay, we'll figure it out later. So now I need to figure out how to compensate my kids in Bitcoin so they can, you know, keep track of their earnings and everything without, you know, having a child with an iPhone or something like that.
I mean, the first person to do this, we're going to be the first customers. I just have a notes app that's like, here's Bennett's Bitcoin. You know, it's a little leisure of how many sats he has, but
you're giving me my own product ideas. There you go. Okay.
If you make it, we will blast it out to our audience, because I think it's a great, what's something kid friendly and kids, you know, basically dummy proof that kids can essentially have a piggy bank of Bitcoin. That'd be great.
Yeah. Build it and they will come. Yeah, that's for sure. So explain the distinction here between for the sister companies. So one is sort of, would it be fair to bucket it as like media and like written sort of content? Is that kind of a distinction, or where's the line drawn?
Yeah, that's fair. Like, you'll notice with the show, the characters are a little bit different than the books. We wanted the show to kind of play to more of a TV audience. And we wanted to sort of create a backstory with Grandma on the show being from Cuba and kind of explore communism and freedom. The books, you could say the books company, it's a deep dive. It's much more education, and the book and the show's more fun mixed in. But I mean, they complement each other. And like, I use both in my house when I'm homeschooling, and we've, you know, heard great things from people using both. So,
So how would you frame the problem with modern education? And I'm reading Connor's opinions on it to my 4-year-old right now, I think, but, I think that there are still a lot of people who woke up during COVID. I agree with you. I think there are a lot of people who think that there is still like this structure that needs to be had that I no longer, you know, in my previous life, I certainly was convinced of that, but that I no longer feel. How would you maybe frame that for anyone listening who might have optionality to homeschool their kids, but isn't at the moment because they think that they're, you know, whatever they're doing is sufficient or, you know, perhaps even optimal? How would you sort of lay that out?
Yeah, I don't want to be too harsh, because everyone has a different, you know, background and life circumstance, right? And so if public school is the only choice that you can make work, that's great. I would just say, like, Tuttle Twins can be something, a resource, you know, outside of school if that's your jam. But I would say, you know, as I've gone down the rabbit hole and just reflected on my own schooling, like, I grew up in public school. A lot of times the system's based off of the Prussian, you know, school system that basically made kids into factory workers or soldiers, right? So it's just, how many hoops can you jump through? You know, they grade the kids like grade of meat, right? Like A, B, C. Like, it took me, like, personally, anecdotally, I was not interested in economics at all in school. It was only afterwards, as I'm studying Tuttle Twins, that I'm just fascinated. Like, I probably done over 1,000 hours of research on Bitcoin, right? Just Bitcoin podcasts and books and things. And it's just because it's so fun, right? It's like, it's so engaging to learn. And so if I'm thinking about my own experience, like, kids love to learn. They just hate being bored. And what school does, at least in my experience, is it often just, it pushes you through the factory. It drills that love of learning out of you and makes you have to, you know, go after those achievements. And so, I don't know. I think the purpose of education should be teaching kids how to think, not what to think. You know, not memorizing dates, but like learning why the founders of our country did what they did. You know, learning why Henry Ford did what he did. and things like that. So understanding how it applies to our day, and that's kind of our goal with the show, is just we always set it up with some problem in the twins world they can reflect on, you know, the history, the historical example, and realize, oh man, these people, you know, first of all, their life was much harder than mine, but they also, you know, use these same principles to think about how they're going to, you know, solve their problems.
Yeah, I think if I were to frame it, like what the distinction I see in like the Tuttle Twins approach is, it's not that you all give necessarily like all the answers. It's more make you think about the way that the world works. And that's something that, and here's the thing for anyone listening who is like, I was public school kid until high school, went to a private school for high school. My son is, you know, he's only four or, you know, four and a half. And he goes a couple days a week, part day to a private school, and their values align with ours well. And so until he reaches kindergarten, that's just something we've decided to do, like give him exposure to like another world and everything. But what I would say is like this little private school that he goes to, the curriculum is not materially different than a public school. And that was my experience in high school. Like it was a smaller school. And so I had like more one-on-one, you know, time with teachers to, you know, for help or that sort of thing, which was useful. But at the end of the day, most of what I walked away having learned has been completely and utterly useless in my life. And I had to spend a hell of a lot of time sitting in a classroom to acquire that generally useless or forgotten information. And like what I'm finding with the work you all have done is these are concepts that can be broad, like if you can instill these in your kids, they can be broadly applied, like the critical thinking for them to look at a situation and say, because like the way you guys frame it a lot of times is, you know, like Emily or Ethan, for people who aren't listening, these are the twins, the two characters. One of them will say, well, isn't it good to, you know, want to help the, you know, poor people or whatever? And I think every kid and most adults have that same inclination, right? And it's a part of us. But then to pull on the thread further and to say, yes, but by what mechanism is that work done? Is it you being robbed by a centralized entity and them helping in whatever capacity that they deem worthy? Or is it you deciding as a free person that this is, I want to go help this individual or this group of people or whatever. And so to me, I think the biggest delta between what you're doing and what any school almost is doing is just critical thinking. Is that maybe a way you would frame it as well?
Yeah, absolutely. It's digging below that, you know, surface level and understanding how the world works. Yeah. I think, you know, as I've gone through each of these episodes, you know, we're doing one on rent control right now and minimum wage, stuff that sounds so good on the surface, but has such a sinister underbelly. And you just don't know until you understand how it works. And it's stuff that you can go your whole life. You know, you just look at what's happening in New York City right now, you know, electing a socialist mayor. You can go your whole life without learning these things. And then, you know, what's bad seems good and what's good seems bad. And you don't know which way is up. And so hopefully in instilling these values in kids early enough to be able to actually think critically about what's coming their way, you know, they can be a little bit immune to some of these very intoxicating ideologies.
Yeah, I think we probably take for granted, you know, I've known for a long enough time. I started reading Thomas Sowell when I was just out of college, I guess. And I mean, my thoughts and opinions have evolved past just sort of what he writes about. But I've known for a long time the problem with things like rent control. I take for granted that I'm raising now children who, if you could explain to them in a meaningful way, you know, what the essence of rent control is, that they and communists are the only two people who could imagine that to be a good idea. And so, like the communists I can ignore, you know, for the most part, except on Twitter, but like with my kids, it becomes a much harder concept to explain because the desire to do good and to help it's just ingrained in all of us. And I think what you guys have done here is just fantastic. Remind me, how many episodes do you have in each season?
Yeah. So we have about 12 in each season.
Okay.
We have some minisodes as well. And yeah, we'll have 10 in season 4. So we broke them out into, we have some mini-sodes coming out this summer as well. So,
you said it takes 9 to 10 months from sort of beginning to end production. Are you just doing all of those in parallel? Like are you writing all of these, or do you have a team? What's going on?
Yeah. So we have a team, about a team of 20 to 30 in-house. And then we have an animation company that we work with in Ireland. They have about 100 members of their team who helps animate the show. And we're a little odd that we release one episode each month. So starting in October, we'll have, you know, the premiere episode and then the second episode in November and vice versa. So that's just how we've just sort of made it work.
Is the production company you're working with, are they, were they vetted to be philosophically aligned with you, or are they just like, they'll do whatever?
Like, how we chose it was, we didn't want to work with a production house that was getting government subsidies. So we don't take subsidies with the show. We didn't want to be preaching one thing and then taking another. So that was our big thing. You have to be able to do the work. And then like, we don't want the subsidy by the government. They agree with most things. There's some episodes where they're like, we really don't like the guest star you chose, but they're really great. So
you have an example you can share, or is that something you got to keep quiet?
I probably can't share the example I'm thinking of, but yeah.
Yeah, no, understood. So you've got all of this going on, and then in the midst of it sounds to me like a resounding success. You have something that happened more recently, I think, in Argentina. And so for those who aren't familiar, Javier Milei is now the president of Argentina. I think people have sort of mixed opinions on him. Is he hardcore, you know, libertarian, Austrian economics as people think? Maybe besides the point here, tell everyone the story about Argentina. What was going on, and then what did he decide to do about it?
So the great question. Before the election, I guess shortly after he won the election, you know, his catchphrase is afuera, like get out of here. Let's cut down the government. Let's really stop the bleeding and bring inflation down. He wanted to cut their public TV channel and the opposition wouldn't let him. They're like, no, let's keep it. And so what he's done, and literally their public TV, essentially their PBS, it's called Paca Paca. They had a show called La Asombrosa Vida de Karl Marx or something like that. So like Awesome Life of Karl Marx. And it was so like straight up just Marxist propaganda. And so instead of, you know, shutting it down like he wanted to, he just is licensing Tuttletons, and we give him a great deal. Like, we're not gonna like charge an arm and a leg to Argentina. We just want the impact to get out there. And so now Tuttletons is being broadcast to millions of families across Argentina. And now the opposition's like, shut it down. So it's very,
that's awesome.
It's very fitting.
I didn't know they had a show on Karl Marx. I'd heard that was kind of the general story. I didn't know it was such an egregious violation of people's ability to think. It's cool though, because like I feel like a lot of what's happening, and I'm sure you've got a lot of stories, is some of this is just happening by osmosis, right? Like it's trickling into a place like Argentina that, you know, you probably a few years ago would have never imagined that a state television station was broadcasting, was going to broadcast your show. Are there any other cool stories like that you have, or schools that are adopting it, or other, you know, sort of big institutions that are running with this?
Yeah, we're having a lot of conversations that I can't quite mention right now, but talking to some nation states, which is really cool. Like was not on my bucket list or, you know, my bingo card. To be having these conversations. I'd say, let's see, what can I say? I mean, we just hear hundreds of stories all the time. Basically, families, you know, we do hear, you know, this was shown in a public school or this was shown in a private school. And we've done assemblies where we've been able to go and kind of, you know, show it to whole schools. And that's been really satisfying. We've had a lot of Bitcoin groups for kids, like in different countries, show our Bitcoin episode, you know, in front of whole kid, you know, gymnasiums of kids in Africa and South America. And so, I mean, yeah, it's like our whole goal for this show to begin with was let's reach 100 million kids and families. And so it's been very humbling and gratifying just to see, wow, like it's been such a grind, but it's now getting to that point of escape velocity that, you know, we're just seeing the results and seeing so many people just being affected by tidal cleans.
I'm curious, do you have like a way that you're tracking that metric? Because to me, it would seem like you guys have to be doing pretty well on your, be well on your way to 100 million people who have seen this, kids who have seen this.
Yeah. I mean, we know that the show's had over 400 million views across the app and across, you know, social media platforms. But people rip our stuff all the time and we'll find videos with like tens of millions of views. And so we don't know. I mean, it's just a guess. It's just a North Star. I'm not sure where, how far we are to that goal. But yeah, I mean, we're just sort of marching that direction.
Yeah. I bet you you're pretty close if you haven't already, for what that's worth. And exactly. What I'm hopeful for too, is that there are going to be families. Like I purchased some of your stuff very intentionally. And by the way, apparently my wife had already purchased some of what I bought when I was in Las Vegas. So we've got copies for both of our older kids now. But it's, I have a feeling there are going to be a lot of parents who buy this because someone recommended it, or they go watch the show or what have you. And it reorients their thinking toward liberty. Because a lot of these concepts are broken down in such a way. Again, like I don't think my 4-year-old is really, I don't think he can conceive of really what's happening. He just sort of enjoys the story and the characters more than the concepts being taught at this point in time. But I know the day is coming where we'll start talking about, you know, have a dialogue about what did we learn. But I think there will be a lot of parents who have this on in the background, or they're reading it to their kids because their friend gifted it to them or whatever. And I mean, their perspective is going to shift immensely, because I can tell you it's like Bitcoin, where you can't unsee it. And a lot of these concepts are so obvious, but they've been just sort of hidden from society and all of our public institutions, that many people grew up in public schools like you and I did, and it never crossed their mind until someone sort of, you know, pulled the veil back. So it's very exciting. So yeah. I'm curious then, you've got all of these mediums that you've, you know, used to get the Tuttle Twins into the world. Are there other things that you're currently working on, projects that you're hoping to do in the future?
Man, we're just taking it one season at a time. We've thought about a movie. It'd be really cool to do a Tuttle Twins movie, you know, if there's demand for that.
Oh, that would be cool.
We'd make it much more cinematic, probably less educational, more fun. But I mean, it really is just a kind of a season at a time things. We're so excited for season 4. And as we go along with new seasons, the cool part is we hopefully gain enough trust from our audience that they can go along with us, you know, further and further down the rabbit hole on things. Like, we're excited to do an episode on the food industrial complex this season, and on the overpopulation myth. And we're actually going to look at Keynesianism. And we have an episode with Keynes and actually Saifedean Ammous together. And it's kind of a cool debate lesson. So lots of lessons that, like, no way could we have done them season 1, but just stuff that hopefully expands parents and kids' minds as well.
Yeah. Okay, so let's, I would love to hear, and this is maybe sort of beyond Tuttle Twins and some of what we've talked about so far, but so you're homeschooling your kids. Understand that you're earlier on in your journey. Sort of sounds like a very similar spot to where we are. I'm curious, could you maybe talk a little bit about the approach? You know, to what extent you're involved, your wife's involved, your because like I do you know Daniel Prince? He's a no, Bitcoiner in the UK. So I had him on the podcast a few weeks ago for the second time, and he is he doesn't like the term homeschooling. He's like, you know, I think like that's where your kids should be schooled. Like there shouldn't be a term for that. Or if it is, it's that's sort of a misnomer. And he like his approach is very hands off and allowing his kids to just sort of learn and explore and grow organically. And you know, my wife and I think probably have a bit of a harder time getting over that hump to just say, you know, hey, like there's no lesson plan or whatever. What is it that you're doing? What have you found to be successful so far, knowing it's early on in your journey, and any changes you're making as we come up on a new school year?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's all trial and error. I've heard from parents, oh yeah, they're free range. But some parents are like, no, we stick to structured lesson plans until they're like in second grade or third grade, and they can kind of read independently. And then, you know, it's more interest-based. Yeah, for us right now, what we found is working is we just sort of have a curriculum that my wife loosely follows for my son and kind of guides him through, you know, math, science, reading. Once a week, I do a little history lesson with the kids. And I have a daughter who's a preschooler. And, you know, the first day I did it, my son was like, oh, I hate learning. So he's already like learning this, like learning is work. And I basically just made it a play where, you know, I acted out like, you know, the Silk Road, not the anonymous Silk Road, but you know, the original one. And we acted like we were traveling back in time and kind of learning these principles of free trade and playing it. And by the end of that lesson, my son was crying for another one. And so that was really fun to me just to, you know, relearn like, man, learning can be play, you know, and it should be fun. And I know not every parent is, you know, wants to just dress up and play with their kids. You know, that's probably not like their jam, but I think just being flexible and learning, like just because, you know, the Prussian school system tells you have to do it a certain way doesn't mean that's the end all be all. And I think, I mean, just from my experience post school, if you can make learning fun, I think it's just, that's the fuel that gets them to learn. It's not, if it feels like work, we're probably doing it in a way that is not, you know, the best long-term solution. But man, we're just taking it one day at a time. My wife is just such a rock, and that's, I mean, it's resting heavily on her. I help out as much as I can, you know, here and there, but yeah, that's, and you know, next year I could tell you something completely different. But it's been cool to see like the growth already with our son and daughter.
Yeah. No, that's really cool. So do you have any, I think what's hard, like as we talk about this, because we're both at a stage where our kids need to learn how to read. And I think that's kind of the key that unlocks a lot of doors for additional learning, for more exploration of the things that they want to focus on. But in the meantime, it feels they need to count, they need to read, they need to do like these basic, the building block things. Are there, beyond that, are there things like extracurriculars that you guys get involved in that, you know, you find to be useful, or that you say, hey, this is mandatory. Like our kids are going to learn how to do X, Y, or Z. And that's something that we will be more structured on.
I mean, we're just such in that fluid stage of kind of getting that rhythm. So yeah, I don't know what to tell you there. We're always just trying to push each of our kids into their own extracurricular thing. And my son's to the point where he's like, sports aren't my thing. You know, he wants to go into movies already. So, but I don't know. Yeah. Just kid by kid kind of thing. I'm all ears, you know, for recommendations. Well,
I think that's cool because my son wants to play sports. But like, you know, like for your son, there are, you know, like you could find camps where they do, you know, like acting. And like the thing is what I have found with a lot of these things is, like my daughter's taking piano lessons and she's having a blast. For me, that's a non-negotiable because I've never met someone who regretted knowing how to play guitar or piano. And I come from a sort of a musical family. And we want to make it as fun as possible, but we want to, you know, make sure that they have some of these lifelong skills that I know when they're 18 years old. I know a lot of guys who wish that they could pick up a guitar and, you know, play a song for a girl at age 18 who can't, you know, because there was never that influence in their home. But just trying to make it as fun as possible. What I was going to say, like, about, you know, your kid who is interested in, like, you know, movies, what I find is that there's always, like, you know, you start to put them into positions where they can do those things that they seem to love. And then there's always like an additional takeaway, like being on a stage in front of people and learning how to present yourself and, you know, follow the guidance, but have some creative liberty. Like, you can learn 5 skills, you know, every time you're put into these new environments. And it's so fun to see, but you have to, there's like this tension, you know, where you want to push your kids, you know, to like stretch themselves and try new things. And you also don't want to fall into the Prussian education trap where you're right. determining this is what you learn and this is how you learn. So I find it to be, I don't know if you guys have that same sort of, you know, balancing act that you're the wire that you're walking.
Yeah. I mean, absolutely. Yeah. And it's a constant juggle and balance. To your point, like, yeah, sports, your kids can learn so much more than just athleticism, right? Teamwork, how to work with others. And just finding, I think there is that Goldilocks zone of getting in flow. That's just really good. It needs to be challenging, but not too challenging. And obviously your kids are going to find what they're most interested in, and letting them kind of be a little more led by what they're passionate about is great too.
How have you found finding community within sort of the homeschool realm? Like, do you have a pretty good group of people that your kids are surrounded by, or is it pretty isolated for you?
Yeah, we're kind of developing that right now. I have some friends who have great homeschool co-ops that they like work with and kind of give that outlet to their kids. Like, for us right now, my son goes to just like a private school for like a couple hours every day for 3 days a week. And he just sort of does extracurriculars there. And so that's been a good outlet for him for community. And then otherwise it's like karate or, you know, whatever it is, film camp or something like that. But yeah, I mean, we're definitely in that state of flux. Like, we want to make sure that this is sustainable, and it's also like, let's find like-minded people to be able to share the load or kind of paddle in the same direction with us. So.
Yeah. I think for my wife, she's kind of found that group. It makes it a lot easier as you go, and different people within that group can take on different responsibilities and introduce the kids to different concepts. And what I found with that is that kids, the one hard thing about homeschool is that kids do like being around other kids. And so there is like, I think they have like a Shakespeare club that they're doing, that like one of the homeschool moms is doing on Fridays. So like tomorrow they'll be going to that. And to them, like, the topic is far less of a concern, that then they get to go see their friends and be around other people. And so it's been helpful, you know, for people who are looking for solutions around homeschooling. You know, I think having that community and building that over time is an incredibly valuable thing. And Johnny, I hope you guys find that, because my wife was fortunate. She was sort of grandfathered into group through her sister-in-law, who has an older daughter. So, Johnny, I think that's most of what I wanted to cover with you today. I did not prepare you for the final question, so I apologize. I'm thrusting this upon you. So I end every show with the question, what is an unpopular opinion that you have, and you get bonus points if you offend some Bitcoiners with it? So I'll give you a moment. Nothing is off limits here, by the way.
What is an unpopular opinion I have? Ooh, I mean, I feel like I share a lot of unpopular opinions that Bitcoiners have.
Yeah.
Gosh.
I'll tell you what. So I had Safety on the show a while back, and this is this came out of left field. I figured he'd have 1,000 unpopular opinions around economics, Bitcoin, whatever. And his was, he hates movies. He doesn't understand why people take time to watch movies. So if there's anything quirky about you that you're just like, this is like the thing that I don't get and the rest of the world seems to think is normal, that might be a prompt for you.
I mean, for me, yeah, I go to sports games to talk to people. I like sports as a way to get exercise. But yeah, I don't know if I'm just missing the gene of the, competitive sort of tribal whatever. But the whole rooting for a sports team is not my jam. But, I understand it is for so many. And we needed that for the wars back in the day. So, yeah, that's probably what I'd say. Come at me. Come at me, sports people.
I love it. I like it. It's funny because I tend to agree with most of the unpopular opinions that people give. And I agree. I love sports. I play in an indoor soccer league. I play occasionally. I'll play pickup basketball. I've got a college basketball team I don't follow, but if it's on, I'll watch it. But I could not possibly care less about following sports. I don't know the players, the statistics, nothing. It's just never done it for me. So you will offend some people with that who don't get you, but I'm on board, man. So I love it.
Well, in the end, it's like, man, if there's an ROI on happiness, like unless you pick one of the best sports teams to like invest your happiness and attention into, like you're just going to be sad. And maybe that's the goal. Maybe that's, something you can't control and you're going to be sad. But other than that, whatever. You do you.
You're right. Only one team wins the Super Bowl each year. So everyone else has to be sad for the remainder. Johnny, this has been a blast, man. I could talk to you all day. This is a bit of an unorthodox show for us. We talk about a lot of different things, but this is probably a little more niche for our listeners who have a family, have kids. Tell those folks where they can find you, where they can learn about Tuttle Twins, watch the episodes, all of those things.
Yeah, just you can see clips on our social media. If you want to watch the episodes for free, you can watch seasons 1 through 3 now for free at angel.com/Tuttle Twins. We'll be premiering season 4 in October. There's going to be a paywall for the season, but then eventually it'll become free in a year or two. But if you love what we're doing, consider, joining the Angel Guild on the Angel app. That's where it's at. And then you can help support make future episodes of Tuttle Twins. So thanks for your attention and time.
Yeah, absolutely. Are you on X? Are you on Twitter?
Yeah.
Should people go follow you somewhere?
Yeah, you can follow me on Twitter, Johnny Vance on there. So.
Okay. Perfect. Perfect. Awesome. Johnny, thank you so much for the time, man. Hope to catch up again soon.
Awesome. Thanks, Michael.
Cheers. And that's a wrap. Again, hope you enjoyed my conversation with Johnny. Awesome guy, doing some incredible work. Love everything Tuttle Twins. Go check out the Tuttle Twins everywhere Johnny told you to go. Follow him on X. Of course, do me a huge favor. If you're enjoying the podcast, help us feed the algorithm. Give us a like, subscribe, comment, share it with someone. We would really, really appreciate that. And of course, if you need help taking your Bitcoin into proper 100% self-custody, doing it the right way the first time, go to thebitcoinway.com/podcast. We would love for you to schedule a free 30-minute consult with a member of our team where we can walk you through how it is we go about doing this. No KYC, no compromising, no nonsense, none of that. We also help with online privacy, setting up privacy phones. We have a Plan B residency option that is incredibly popular right now. People are looking to get away from tyrannical jurisdictions, rightfully so. We even have a solo mining service so we can help you set up your BitAx or other solo miners that we support. Again, thebitcoinway.com/podcast. Until next time, stay safe, stay sovereign, and remember the yield on Bitcoin is freedom.